We do wish you a Merry Christmas and welcome you to our service today. I think this is a unique time of year. Certainly, as I've mentioned many, many times before, when I was growing up, this was a time of year when people in the church ignored what was going on in society. We just pretended like nothing was happening. That's changed over the years, and there are some obvious positives in this season. There's behavior that people have. There's awareness of spiritual things. And the reality is there are things you can talk about at this time of year that you can't talk about any other time of year without creating conflict. And so we have an opportunity to be very straightforward. We have an opportunity to invite people to church. We have an opportunity to share spiritual ideas and concepts. We can talk about God's Son. And I think it's important that we use that time in appropriate and beneficial ways. This morning, I want to say I'm going to do Christmas stories again this year. They're light stories. If you cry, certainly you're not supposed to. Let's put it that way. It's not intended to in any fashion. And I know there'll be people afterwards who'll say, that story made me cry, but it's not intended to make you cry. And I've really looked for about the lightest stories that I could possibly find. But I do want to say, before we get started, really, this can be not only a fun time of year, but it can be a painful time of year. There's the reminders of the past and memories from the past. There are people here today that are about to go through their first holiday without somebody that they cared about very, very much. And that's painful and that's difficult. Terry and I were reminded of this yesterday watching the OU-Baylor game because Joyce was a Baylor grad, lived in Waco for years. That's Terry's hometown. Just all kinds of stuff that was going on there. And about the time OU went behind in the late in the first half, Terry got a text from her sister that said, "I heard a voice from heaven say, 'Sick 'em Bears.'" Those people make such a difference in our lives and such an impression in our lives. And we look back, and at every table, there'll be missing individuals. And in some of those situations, that emotion will be so raw that it'll be really hard to cope with. Maybe others, you can really have that wonderful memory of that very special situation. And for others, it may be that special memory is 5 years down the road. But we can still be grateful for these people God has blessed us with in our lives. Story this morning is about a daughter and a mom. There's a little prelude to the story that says simply, a mother is a person who, seeing there are 4 pieces of pie for 5 people, promptly announces that she never did really care for pie. I knew I was not supposed to be quite so excited. I was too old for that. My age, 11, the oldest and my mom's, quote, grown-up girl, I had to keep my cool. I was in middle school, after all. But every chance I got, when I was alone, I checked each present under the tree. I read each tag and felt every package, guessing at the contents within. I had examined each gift so often that I could tell which present went to which person without even looking at the tags. It had been a tough year for my family. Whenever my mom looked at the tree and the scattered presents, she would sigh and warn us, "There won't be as much for Christmas this year. Try not to be disappointed." Christmas had traditionally been a time for my parents to spoil us. In past years, the presents would pile up and spill out from under the tree, taking over the living room. I had heard the phrase, "Giving is better than receiving," but I had thought that whoever had said that must have been out of their mind. Getting presents was the whole point. It was the reason I couldn't go to sleep on Christmas Eve. On Christmas morning, we eagerly gathered in the hallway until Dad told us everything was ready. We rushed into the living room and let the wrapping paper fly. We made weak attempts to wait and watch others while family members opened their presents, but as time passed, we lost all of our self-control. "Here's another one for you," said Mom, as she handed me a package. I looked at it, confused. Having spent so much time examining the presents before Christmas, I recognized this one, but it was not mine. It was my mom's. A new label had been put on it with my mom, with my name written in my mother's handwriting. Mom, I can't. I was stopped by a mother's eager, joyful look, a look I could not really understand then. Let's see what it is, honey. Hurry and open it. It was a blow dryer. Though this may seem like a very simple gift, to me it was much more. Being an 11-year-old girl, I was stunned. In my world, where receiving outweighed giving by light years, my mom's act of selfishness was incomprehensible. It was a huge act. Tears filled my eyes, and I thought in disbelief of how much my mom must love me to give up her Christmas so that I could have a few more presents. I've always remembered that Christmas fondly. It had such impact on me. As an adult with children of my own, whom I adore, I can now understand my mom's action and see how she was not, quote, giving up her Christmas, as I had thought, but was finding an even greater joy in her Christmas, because giving truly is better than receiving. My mom's simple act meant the world to me. It was a hairdryer. And yet, what it taught, the sharing that it taught at that moment, was just so powerful and so useful and so memorable in the life of this woman. I think we could quickly, and I will try to this morning, draw three things from this story. The first of all is just maturity. This girl didn't understand what mom was doing. But as a mom, she totally understands what mom was doing and the reason that mom did it. I remember a day when I was about 10 years old that my mom had asked me to walk down to the little grocery store. We were at my grandparents' house and to buy my sister and myself a popsicle. And so we walked down to the little store, each bought a popsicle. As we headed back home, my sister dropped hers. And so I gave her mine. And I remember how good that felt. It felt like, oh, I'm really getting grown up. This is pretty impressive. You know, I was pretty pleased with myself. And I can tell that story because every one of you have probably more than one story of that similar kind of experience where you remember making that first sacrificial offering that said not only to people around you, but to yourself, hey, I'm growing up. And we love maturity. Maturity isn't critical, and it's so really important. It's not always the people who are older who are mature. In our very first youth ministry experience, we had a young girl. She was 16 years old, and she had severe scoliosis, and she had to have surgery. And she spent about 6 months, as I remembered, in a full body cast. And the thing that really bothered her the most about the body cast, she had to have school at home. Terry was her homebound teacher. And she wasn't able to come to church. She desperately wanted to come to church. And so finally we worked it out where we were able to borrow a gurney. There was somebody in the church who had a station wagon in which that would fit. And so every Sunday morning there was a trip to her house to load her up in the station wagon and bring her to church. She'd come in the back door and roll all the way down the aisle, and the gurney would sit right here in front of the pulpit. It was critical for her to be there. And there was an older lady who sat down on the front. And as Ellen was being brought in, typically there would be times when the crowd would kind of surge a bit, and so she would stop, and she would reach up and shake hands and try to encourage people. And there was this one lady, I can remember one Sunday morning, they're bringing her down, and that situation happens, and Ellen looks up and says, "How are you today?" And the lady looks over the side and says, "Oh, not good. I'm just not feeling well." And she proceeded to give this child all of this grief that she was experiencing. And I could understand why she was primed to do that. And at the same time, you couldn't escape the reality that at least in the moment, the 16-year-old girl was more mature in that context. We often assume that maturity comes with years. And it should, but sometimes it doesn't. Some people arrive at it earlier than others. In Psalms chapter 51, verse 17, I found an unusual verse that I wanted to share. It says, "My sacrifice, O God, is a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart, you, God, will not despise. What can I give you? And the writer says, how about break that spirit? How about let go of that ego? How about let go of that perfection? How about let's slide that image for just a little bit? How about being real and honest and open about the things that are good and the things that are not in your life and your behavior? Probably seen that principal commercial. It's the one where the daughter wants to stay with the grandparents for her senior year. And so that's what's taking place. And Grandpa tells her about his dream car. And a couple of times in the commercial, you see the dream car. And then at the very end, Grandpa goes to the financial advisor and gets out the money to buy a car. And, of course, in this brief commercial, he gives the car to the granddaughter. Not his dream car, but a car that she could use. And she says, but Grandpa, what about your dream car? And he says, this is my dream car now. We look at folks and we say, that's maturity, and I understand it, and that's the place I really want to go and the place where I want to be. The other thing that we have the opportunity to do is to make our feelings real. You know, I can say that I love, I can say that I would give, I can say that I would be sacrificial, but there are times when I get an opportunity to really do that. And often we kind of oversell that. You know, the sacrificial person is the person who gave their life for the country. And that's a wonderfully sacrificial thing to do. But what it sometimes does is it causes other people to drop back and say, well, I haven't made a gift like that, so I haven't really done anything sacrificial. I haven't given an enormous wealth. I haven't put my health on hold or given an organ or something like that. We have these really high standards. And I think if we'll look at what God is asking us to do, we find a very different situation than that. In Hebrews chapter 3, verses 15 and 16, says, through Jesus, therefore, let us continually offer to God a sacrifice of praise. We bring the sacrifice of praise. The fruit of lips that openly confess his name. Well, what would it be? Do not forget to do good and to share with others. For with such sacrifices, God is pleased. And if you allow yourself to be honest, I think that the vast majority of people in this room would say, well, I do that every day. I do good and I share with other people. Maybe not in this huge dramatic way, but in really critical and important ways. I asked Jessica this morning if I could share this story, and she told me that I could. She was going to the grocery store. She needed an extra item, I believe a can of tomatoes for supper. And of course, there's three young girls with her in the car. And as she drives into the parking lot, she sees Connie Ludwig. And they have a brief conversation. Connie says, why are you here? And she says, I was needing this one item. And Connie says, well, I'll get it for you. And she does. And she saves her the trouble of having to unload and reload and do that change. If I asked Connie if I could share that story, she would have said, no, you can't. And I totally understand. But the reality of it is, that's really what we're talking about here, folks. That's really the sacrifices that God wants from us. Yeah, there may be those moments when something big is called for, but more than anything, and this passage is saying, just do good and share with others. Just do those simple sacrificial things. And I'll be proud of you and pleased with you. And we do that on a routine basis, and surprise, surprise, what happens? Romans 12, verse 1. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercies, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. You read that passage, and I think, again, we're frightened of it. How do I make my body into a living sacrifice? Well, just do good and sacrifice for others. Just do that. And that's what happens. The last thing I'd like to share is when you sacrifice, you feel this commonality with God. We know that God sacrifices. Matthew 7:11. If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? God likes to give us good gifts. And then when we look at Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. So God created mankind in his own image. The image of God he created them, male and female he created them. God made us like him. And when we sacrifice, we're sharing not only what we're offering, but our common element with God. And it sometimes feels really, really, really good. Why? Because it's supposed to. It's supposed to be rewarding. The intrinsic satisfaction that comes from sharing a behavior that God himself expresses and utilizes is something that builds us up as we do that. It's supposed to feel that way and be that way. As I look across the audience this morning, there are a lot of you here whose lives are vocationally sacrificial. You've chosen to do things of service, things that help other people, to teach and to help and to lead and to provide services and those kind of things, because that's the kind of people you are. I don't know that that's necessarily about personality as much as it is the way you want to serve and the way you want to be God's people. But it feels really, really good. I say this every year, and I'll say it this year only once, hopefully. Society allows us to do certain things at this time of year that they don't approve of any other time. There are things you can do in January or December right now that if you did them in July, somebody would pull you aside and say, are you sure that's a good idea? Are you sure that you want to do that? Don't make it a habit. That's a December kind of thing. How much more could we all be blessed if we didn't limit it to one section of life? We can sacrifice because the sacrifice has been given for us. Romans chapter 5, verse 23. God presented Christ as a sacrifice of atonement through the shedding of his blood to be received by faith. He did this to demonstrate his righteousness because in his forbearance he left the sins committed beforehand unpunished. I read of a grandfather who was getting on up there in years, and he decided that he just didn't have the resources and time, the ability to get around so that he could buy everybody in his family a Christmas present. So he did what a lot of older people would do. He decided he'd give everybody in his family money. So he wrote out checks to all these people, got out the cards, made out the address them and stamped them and mailed them. And in each of the cards, he put, buy your own present. That was fine except for one oversight. He forgot to put the checks into the envelopes. So everybody in the family opened their card up and thought, well, Grandpa's getting a little harder to deal with than he used to be. Go buy yourself something, you know. God doesn't say to us, go handle it yourself. He says, I already bought it. I've already paid for it. I've already provided it. All you have to do is accept it. David said about the threshing floor, I'm not going to accept something that I get for free. I want a sacrifice. I want to pay for this because I want the experience of what that's really like. This morning, if your sacrifice leads you to the place where you say, I need to change the way I deal with God, then we'd be glad to help you in that process if you'd make that known while we sing this song together.